Tom Davis making his presence felt. That's loose though by Moore, and it falls the way of Watson.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graeme Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Here for our last podcast of the season. Yes, yes, season 16 comes to a close with this podcast, and what a momentous season it's been. What an amazing season it's been. And it's finished off so well for us, all of us on the podcast. Terry obviously wasn't here last week. He took his holiday early, but he's come back for the last podcast of the season to talk about what happened the week before when Palace won the FA Cup. Jan's here. Jan has recovered fully from Sunderland's exploits in the playoff final on Saturday. And I've flown in from Lisbon. Yesterday morning, I woke up in Lisbon. Today, I'm back here in stately Sound of Football manner here in Whyteleafe, having watched Arsenal women win the Champions League. We've all had a fabulous weekend. Shall I hit the hot chocolate button now?
Go for it.
Okay, here goes. Oh, yeah, baby. Everyone is a winner. Everyone's a winner on this podcast. Yeah. Do you know what? As well, next season, all three of our clubs are going to be in the top flight. That's not happened since 2017. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. That's how long that... And it's only ever happened for four seasons throughout the whole time we've been doing the podcast, even when Chris was here. Actually, every season that Chris was on the podcast, Palace were in the Championship, and they haven't been back since he left the podcast. Coincidence, Terry?
No. Why do you think we don't let him back in? He keeps asking. We keep giving him the silent double blue tick. Oh, dear.
Well, now he knows why now, doesn't he? So, well, Terry, we'll start off with you because once we start Jan off, he won't finish, will he? So we'll start off with you because yours is the older news. And, of course, you weren't here. Did you actually listen to the podcast last week?
Yes, I did. I did. I listened to your words and your opinions and your thoughts. So I just sat there bathing in the glory of just winning the FA Cup, and I still am bathing. I listened with great interest to your thoughts on Dean Henderson. I didn't necessarily disagree with any of you, but I also didn't care.
And that's what's the most important thing, isn't it, Jan? It's important that Terry doesn't care about these things because his side won a cup, didn't they?
Well, absolutely. My other friend, because I have three, you two and my other friend, I was a Crystal Palace supporter, and he also didn't care. So I said, you're within your rights not to care, because you shouldn't, because you won the FA Cup.
Yes, yes. Well, Terry, what we did say last week was, what now for Palace? How do you walk? Do you walk a bit different now? Do you swagger about? Do you put a little star above your eagle on your shirt now, having won a trophy and not the ZDS Cup, actually having won a trophy that people know about?
Yeah, an actual trophy, yeah.
Yes.
Nothing against the full members cup, the ZDS cup, but I mean, it's a defunct trophy, and it was always, yes, it was always a bit of a consolation, dare I say it, in what was actually a very successful season for Palace. But the FA Cup is next level. Of course, it is a senior trophy. It's one of the oldest cup competitions in the history of football. It's not the oldest, but it's one of the oldest And it is the kind of thing that when you're a boy, you dream about your team winning. And so in a very meaningful way, and I think for an awful lot of people, this is the fulfillment of a dream that has existed since childhood. And that makes it incredibly special in ways that I probably hadn't quite appreciated until it finally has happened. I am a happier person because Palace have won the FA Cup. I don't know whether or not that will last. And I'm not suggesting that this is a cure for people's problems, but life certainly is different, genuinely different. I've invested so much of myself into this club over the years. And then for them to do something like this is just incredibly special and very, very meaningful. And I am very, very happy. And again, yes, I mean, this is why the kind of the minutiae of the game, almost the stuff that happens in the game, is almost at this point not really an issue for me, because, you know, everything else is it's completely transcended by just this wonderful feeling that I have and that I hope that stays with me for a very long time.
I haven't really spoken to many people about the result, not people who have a vested interest. Tomorrow night I'm meeting up with a mutual friend of Terry and I who was there at Wembley, so it'll be great to hear what he's got to say of his day, and I'm sure he'll probably be echoing the sentiments that Terry's just expressed there. We spoke last week about what Palace do now, whether or not they go into the Europa League with confidence and how they shape up for next season. Do they continue to push on up the table, or do they concentrate on getting as far as they can in the Europa League? Which one for you would have priority?
So slight caveat insofar as that there is an issue about Palace's ownership. Lyon qualified for the Europa League at the weekend. And they are majority owned also by a guy called John Textor, who also has a majority stake in Palace. And although Textor is not operationally involved in the running of the club, it's possible that that might preclude Palace from playing in the Europa League. So that is something to think about. I don't know whether or not that would happen, but nobody seems to be too worried about it. So assuming that that is not an issue, I feel that there is a danger that Europa League Thursday-Sunday football could have a detrimental effect on the league season. But I also feel that we have to be, as a club, confident enough to think that we've got the funds, the money, the resources to be able to bring in players, to be able to manage that. And we certainly have the coach to be able to do that. He has direct experience of managing a successful Europa League winning team in Eintracht Frankfurt. And I would say to you, in all candour, my opinion is that Oliver Glasner will try to win the Europa League, because Oliver Glasner tries to win trophies. And he's made that clear from the off. He made that clear at the beginning of the season when we were fielding close to full strength teams in the League Cup. And he made that clear at the beginning of the season, you know, at the beginning of the FA Cup campaign as well, that he doesn't necessarily prioritise the Premier League. He looks to win every game and certainly looks to win cups. And so there's a strong view to say that if this year's Tottenham can win the Europa League, then why not next year's Palace? That is not to say that we will, but I don't think it's appropriate to put a limit on the club's ambitions at this point. Now is the time to go for it. And the worst that will happen is it will all implode in itself and we'll be back in the Championship, you know, in a few years' time. Well, okay. Now we'll have this. But there's every reason to assume that that's not going to happen. And that probably is what happens when you win stuff, is that you go, right, let's win something else. And I think that as sportsmen and as professional sportsmen, that is the correct approach. You know, maybe bean counters and owners, administrators might stroke their chins and be a bit more conciliatory. Steve Parrish might think, well, hang on a second, let's not get carried away with himself. I've still got a dirty, great football stand that I've got to replace. It's the cost of which is spiraling out of control. But professional sportsmen, guys like Oli Glasner and those players, they should at this point be saying, right, what's next? And I think as supporters, you know, we can get behind that.
Glasner has won trophies in 3 out of his last 4 seasons. So there's nothing to stop him going on and winning more stuff. The only thing that will stop him doing it for Palace is maybe the fact that if some other club decides that actually he's pretty good, let's have him. But obviously having won the FA Cup and seeming to have the support of the board there in the transfer market as well. Are you confident he'll stay over the summer?
If he gets the backing in the transfer market, then yes, I'm confident that he'll stay. He says he's 100% committed to the club, but I also feel that he is not above walking away if he doesn't feel as if he's been getting the right support. His reaction after the Liverpool game was telling. He was quite disparaging of some of his players. He subbed off Romain Essay, having put him on as a sub, and I think the consensus was because the lad just was playing too much like a superstar when he's not done anything like enough to earn that. And he was saying that you go to Anfield, you play in front of all of these people, you go and you play to win. You don't, you know, it doesn't matter that it's the last game of the season. It doesn't matter that it's we've won the cup last week. That's the kind of tone and culture that he can set in the club, but it's also the kind of culture that could get old and quite difficult quite quickly, especially if there isn't necessarily the kind of backing from the board and if he starts to feel that perhaps he's not got the players that he needs to realise his ambitions. So I think that there is a small chance that he may yet leave in the summer. But assuming that the club are able, and you know, Steve Parish was quite clear immediately after the final that it was up to him now to provide Oliver Glasner with the backing that he needs to live up to the coach's ambitions. And if they do that, then I think he's an excellent chance that he'll stay at least another season. And yeah, I mean, maybe we'll do something, I was going to say, even more exciting, but I don't think it probably doesn't get more exciting than winning your first ever FA Cup, if I'm being honest with you. I suspect everything else will be, oh, that's good. How lovely. Oh, yuck, a trophy. How nice. You know.
Yeah, I think getting to the Europa League final next season might be quite fun.
But it is in Istanbul, so it would be pretty amazing. But even being able to have a slightly tongue-in-cheek, but I mean, at the same time, he's like, well, why not? I mean, like, yeah. Well, I may not have won the game fair and square, but we got a degree of good fortune. I think that on another day that Henderson would have been sent off. But beyond that, we won the game fair and square. We certainly were the better side, you know, and we beat one of the best teams in Europe in a major cup final, you know, 11 against 11, playing them and being better than them over 100 minutes, 105 minutes. You know, you are allowed to be confident and bullish about your prospects. If not now, then when? You know, otherwise, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, I agree with that, Terry. I mean, and I have heard a few Palace fans say, well, maybe we're a bit fortunate or a bit lucky. I always take exception to that when a team's done well, especially when they've done well to the extent that Palace did in the cup final, because, you know, they didn't get there because they won the lottery. They got there because they deserved to be there. And at the end of the game, they'd score more goals than the other side. And Man City didn't deserve to win that game just because there was a contentious decision over the goalkeeper being sent off. You know, that could have happened and the same result may well have happened, unlikely. But, you know, you make your own luck, I always think. And I think that the way that Palace addressed that game, they were positive, they were on the front foot. You're absolutely right. They were the best team. They deserved to win that through their gameplay alone. And I thought they were worthy winners.
And they've got every right to go for it next season, because there's teams like Sunderland in the Premier League next season who they'll definitely finish ahead of, won't they?
I would imagine they'll finish ahead of Sunderland. In fact, I can probably think of probably another 19 teams that'll probably finish ahead of Sunderland next season. But that's for Jan next season to worry about, because Jan this season is full of beans and all happy.
At half-time in that game, were you full of beans?
No. It felt like Sheffield United had that game by the scruff of the neck. They were the better side. You know, just go back to my previous point. Sunderland were doing everything right. You know, obviously they conceded the goal, but they were still in the game. And I thought that, you know, there was a chance. It just didn't feel like, you know, we were landing a punch on them. And clearly that all changed in the second half.
Yeah. So explain for the listeners what changed, what happened, and how the fairy tale unfolded for you.
Well, obviously, Tyrese Campbell scored after 25. Well, actually, even before that. So within the first minute, Luke O'Neill, who joined us when we were at our lowest ebb, when we hit the third tier, Luke O'Neill was one of the first signings we brought in. He was a slip of a lad at the time. I think he left his parents' house to come and move up to Sunderland, which is daunting in itself. He dislocated his shoulder in the first minute. Patterson pulled off a wonderful save within that same moment. And it felt from there it was going to be hard work, and Sheffield United poured it on. After 25 minutes, Tyrese Campbell scored, and it just felt like it was one-way traffic. But they scored a second, and because VAR is in play or was in play for the final, wasn't for the previous season whatsoever. And actually, Chris Wilder mentioned that in his post-match summing up, which was the only little bit of bitterness that crept into his analysis, which was, I thought, pretty classy of him. But he was quite right. I think, you know, anybody who knows football and hates VAR, and I don't think I'm alone in this, would suggest that putting VAR in was probably the wrong decision. But they did, and that's the way it is. And as Terry said, I really don't care, because VAR was in play. We all knew the rules going into it. We all knew the situation. And for that second goal, Patterson was impeded by a player in an offside position. So fuck them. It stayed 1-0. And then Patterson pulled off another amazing save. And then Sunderland just felt like they were gaining momentum. It just felt like the stars were starting to align. Meander equalised. And then when it looked like we were going into extra time, up popped Tom Watson, who is with his literally his last ever kick in a Sunderland shirt before he goes off to join Brighton. And he just slotted in a wonderfully placed shot from outside of the area, and cue mass, and I do mean mass delirium.
Were you there?
I couldn't get tickets. It was really, I've managed to get tickets for every Wembley final in recent history. This one was particularly difficult for whatever reason. So no, I went with my son and my cousins, and we went to a craft beer pub, which is part of the Bermondsey Beer Mile, which is the home to the Sunderland Supporters Association of London. So it was rammed full of fellow Mackhams, and we had a great time. The hosts were wonderful, and it went crazy when that goal went in. There were grown men with their shirts off, not this grown man, obviously, jumping around in pools of beer. It was crazy. Amazing scenes. Absolute scenes,
absolute,
you might say.
Scenes, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like beating Sheffield United in the last minute of a playoff final with a last-minute goal, is there, Terry?
Hopkin looking to curl one. If you remember, Graham, you were with me. We were in a Palace pub in not around the corner from Selhurst Park.
Yeah, we were.
And it was packed.
Yes,
and it was a beautiful day. And we got very, 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 very drunk. And you got into the spirit of things, despite being an Arsenal fan.
Yes.
You got into the spirit of it. How could you not?
How could I not?
But yes, it reminded me a lot when I saw that. I thought, yeah, 96, 97. Yeah, I remember that. Poor old Sheffield United. Well, I know also what it's like to have that happen to you as well. I mean, we got knocked out in the playoff final by Leicester in the final minute of extra time, and that was devastating. So it's grim for Sheffield United, but obviously wonderful for Sunderland. I know, Jan, you said this is very much next season Jan's problem. But, I mean, Kirill Lewis-Dreyfus, he has money. I mean, I believe he is literally a billionaire. I mean, I don't think that club is short of a bob or two. I mean, is it quite as bleak for Sunderland next season as you think it might be? I mean, what if he does a Forest and signs, you know, half the French league and brings in about 250 players and tries to make it work? I mean, is there a scenario where Sunderland stay up?
I think there is a scenario when we stay up, but I think it will be despite the fact that they don't spend huge amounts of money. My prediction is that the model that they talk about a lot at Sunderland, that the owner has insisted upon, where it's youth first. I mean, we've got the second youngest side in the entire football pyramid and still managed to get promoted to the Premier League, which is brilliant. So the model that they talk about, that's the Christian Speakman, who's the director of football, talks about a lot, is that it, again, youth first, and they won't compromise those morals. As I understand it, I don't think that Sunderland are going to go out and spend as much as Forest, for example, spent. If you look at what Southampton and Ipswich did last season, they spent north of £100 million or around £100 million each, and they got a handful of points to show for it. And I know that that can work, and you know, you use Forest as a very good example of that. But I don't think Sunderland are going to throw loads of money at this. I think they're going to bring in players they think can do a job for them and keep them in the division. But I can't see them throwing loads and loads of money at this. It's all about sustainability. And I think that means the club believes that if they have to take a hit and go back down with their pockets literally stuffed full of Sky money and then build on that, I think that's how they'll see it, as a long-term thing. And it'll be awful next season if we go down in the way that the three clubs this season came down. But I don't think they're going to be chucking the kitchen sink at this. But I think they will have a plan that they believe will succeed in keeping them in the division. But I don't think that plan's going to be hundreds of millions of pounds.
Mm. So let's try to think about a scenario in which Sunderland do manage to stay up with the grit and determination that got them promoted. Who can they target in the top flight and think, yeah, we can finish above that team? If they have a similar season to what they had this season, or if the direction of travel that that team is going in, I don't think that they're going to be as good as they were this season. I think they're worse than their league places. Who do we think are in danger of going down out of the 17 clubs that stayed up?
Just starting with the two clubs that went up. In fact, I'll keep it brief and just only talk about Leeds. I think Leeds will chuck the kitchen sink at this.
Yeah.
And I think they've probably got a chance of succeeding. They're a huge club. They're well supported. And it feels like they've got the right people in charge. But it's massively risky. And they've got a great side. And to break that up, putting a lot of new players in there is going to be a challenge for them. So there's potential there. But out of the 17 who are in there, this is a bit of a theme that's run through the last few pods that we've had, that because the mid-table teams, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way, because there are FA Cup winners amongst that lot, they're so strong. So where are the points going to come from? And that's the real concern. And I imagine that there are Burnley and Leeds fans that are probably thinking exactly the same thing. So it just leaves some of the clubs that are bang on that you're definitely going to get points from. And some of the real sorrowful clubs like Tottenham and Manchester United. I mean, they're the only ones you can really think realistically that you're going to get points from. I'm joking there. But I mean, you did say some of the ones that if they continued the same trajectory, I mean, Manchester United could have their worst season. I mean, they've already had their worst season in half a century, haven't they?
Mm.
Joking aside, we're in a situation where Manchester United could be Sunderland's target points.
Yeah.
It's a reality. And Spurs, God knows what's going to happen with Spurs and which Spurs are going to turn up next season. But other than that, possibly Wolves, although they're quite well led at the moment and they finished strongly, well, compared to how they were going, there's the potential there. But other than that, you're looking at picking up scraps. You really are. Looking at West Ham, they've finished relatively strongly. Jared Bowen suddenly decided he's going to start scoring goals for fun. So they have got some good players there. Depends whether Potter can get them singing. And without going through each of the other ones individually, I mean, Everton are going to be fine. They're in a swanky new stadium and they've got a manager that seems to work for them, although he didn't seem to work for us. And the rest of the teams we've talked about at length over the previous few recordings are so, so good. So it does feel quite bleak, but it is possible. We can't have the situation where the same three keep coming down. I know it's happened in the last two seasons. And I saw a graph the other day, I think it was in The Athletic, and they just showed the total points tally by the three that were relegated over time. And obviously it does jump up and down a little bit, but you can see the trend is only going in one direction. So it's going to be tough for all three promoted clubs. And, you know, the long answer is where you're going to get those points from is anyone's guess.
Mm. I reckon Forest are going to struggle next season. I think there's a club that does not need Thursday, Sunday football. And especially if people come in for some of their star players, especially in defence in the summer. Because I think if someone does come in for good money for those players, I think they're going to sell. Terry, what do you think about teams that are potential for struggling next season?
It's all pointing to the clubs that don't invest in their squad on a year-by-year basis is the issue. I think Forest is a good shout because they've spent an awful lot of money when they went up. They've got PSR issues, I would imagine. There's only so much money they can spend. They might have to let some out before they can get some in. Their transfer policy appears to be somewhat erratic, it has to be said. And that combination may lead to them, along with the Sunday-Thursday schedule, might be a little bit too much for them. Wolves have perennially underinvested in their squad now for a number of years, and they're asking for trouble, and there's only so many Vita Pereiras that they can recruit to bail them out. So they have to be good. And West Ham, I think, again, are a club that did invest. They had an excellent window in the summer, and I think a lot of people were very surprised that they had such a difficult season. If they get that act right, Brian Potter in with a, sorry, I almost called him by his wrong name there, didn't I? Brian Potter gets a good pre-season under the belt, then you know, there's grounds for optimism there. And Everton, new owners, new stadium, I think it's only onwards and upwards for them. So there aren't many prospects there. It'll be the clubs that don't invest well and have poor transfer windows from that mid-table. So any of those clubs, that could be Fulham, could be Brentford, could be Brighton, could be Palace. If they have bad windows and they lose good players and they don't recruit them and can't embed, get the new guys in and working well, then they can struggle and they will be the ones to look out for. But my goodness, it's so competitive because all of those mid-table teams know the consequences of failure and know how disastrous it is for them if they fail. And so they are so hungry for points that they're operating at a level that is so intense that a lot of the championship clubs come up. And I think they think the championship is like super, super intense because it's crazy and chaotic and anybody could beat anybody. But I suspect that a lot of them come up and they're not quite ready for just the sheer intensity of the competition with those clubs, because they are absolutely, you know, they can smell blood. And they will try and punish any weakness. And they'll know that one bad season and it's them, and they're the ones that are down. It's really, really tough call to make. But yeah, those clubs that I mentioned, I think they're the ones that you'd look out for: Wolves, Forest, and maybe West Ham. They're the ones that I think are particularly vulnerable. So that's three.
Yeah.
And three go up.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good call on Forest. And one thing that I think brings them into that category is the chaotic nature of their ownership. Terry, you made a really good point about their erratic recruitment policy. And, you know, all of that comes from the top, doesn't it? And we've seen, I mean, we've talked about them already with United and Spurs, when you've got erratic owners that kind of flip-flop from policy and make decisions that no one sees coming, Forest have got that in spades with Marinakis. And we saw him, although I think his reason for going on the pitch and remonstrating with Nuno was deeper than we initially thought because of the injury to the player in question. However, still entering the playing arena, that's beyond the pale. So, yeah, I get the impression that because they didn't finish as strongly as he would have liked and they would have liked, and didn't get Champions League football, maybe, you know, that could be something that kind of bleeds into next season and could be a bit of a hangover for them. And you're right, with the additional games and those additional pressures, could be quite a season for Forest.
I think that Marinakis has maybe even talked himself into thinking that Forest should have qualified for the Champions League.
Yeah.
And will be disappointed.
Yeah.
And that is not cool. Then that could set the tone for next season.
Five games to go, they were almost assured Champions League football. And they just blew it. There's no doubt about it. The Conference League is less pressure because there's fewer games in it, but it is still the Conference League, and it's an extra load of games for not the sort of reward you're going to get even in the Europa League. So, yeah, we said this last week. We said if he's invested thinking that the Champions League is coming and then it's not, if he's been offering contracts and things like that, then all of a sudden the ugly PSR head rears up again. So, yeah, an interesting thing to see. It wouldn't surprise me, really, because I think there's parallels you can make with Forest's season up until about March with Leicester's season in 2016. Yeah, that whole perfect storm of a good squad, a couple of really, really, really good players in there, the bigger teams not performing well in that season, and all of a sudden you've got a team from the East Midlands rising up and doing really, really well. But of course, we all know what happened to Leicester after that, and I think a similar sort of hangover is waiting for Forest. But sorry, Forest fans. This summer's going to be really interesting to watch, as Terry mentioned there, about what the middle class are spending their money on. Those middle-ranking teams. The transfer business there is going to be the most interesting. Yeah. The big clubs will be spending money and they'll be buying in big names. And yes, of course, Tottenham and Man U will be spending their money on anything they can buy. But it's where the smart money is going in that, because they can't all be brilliant at transfers, at buying and selling. So who wins and who, not necessarily loses, but who doesn't win in the transfer window? And I think looking at those teams is going to show you really where the Premier League is at the moment, because I think they're going to be buying players for mid-table clubs that should be at top clubs in either France or Germany or Italy even.
The Premier League is so rich now, and those middle-class clubs are so rich by this point that they are in a position to be able to start buying players who would otherwise perhaps expect to be playing in the Champions League, in Bundesliga or Liga or in the Serie A, and indeed in La Liga, who could actually go and be playing, you know, for Brighton, for Palace, you know, for Brentford. That's the kind of spending power that they have now. It's a really interesting, you know, way of looking at it. But yeah, I mean, it is also, it's a reality. So, and the speciality is to also to look for those younger players that are coming through in the various academies and then bringing them in. But the competition for them is so fierce because although, you know, there's a lot of football players out there, the pool is still pretty shallow, I would suggest, of genuine top class players to bring in at affordable prices for those middle class teams because they don't have bags and bags of money. So, yeah, I mean, there'll be fierce competition, I think, for those top players. And that will tell us an awful lot about how next season is shaped by that. I hate to say it, guys, but the transfer market, although is a little bit like, oh, God, transfer stories, you know, how gauche. But actually, you know, it is interesting because it does tell us a great deal about who's going to do well. You know, I mean, it's salacious and it's a little bit fun. And I think sometimes you feel a bit grubby, sort of like following the transfer stories. But actually, you know, it is genuine. Look at me. The Palace have won the cup and I'm interested in everything that there is to be interested about football. Honest to God. I need my cynicism back.
No. Let's just enjoy this window while we can, right, Jan?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. While you were doing that, Terry, I was thinking about all of the transfer gossip that'll be going on about all the big players at Sunderland aren't going to buy. But at least I get excited about it while I'm thinking on that. But on a serious point, actually, talking about some decent players that people want to pick up for a decent price. Obviously, Sunderland's got a lot of young players that they've blooded. Chris Rigg has played 60 games and he's not even 17. And he's attracted the attention of a lot of clubs in the Premier League and elsewhere. Joe Bellingham, who, for those who don't know him, is Jude's younger brother, or is Job the other way around? I don't know. I think I messed up the joke there, didn't I? Never mind. Apparently, he's Dortmund were over in England the other day talking to him, and he's in Frankfurt today, apparently. So there's a team like Sunderland who literally only a few days ago went up, and their players have been picked off, and that's going to happen. I'd imagine Leeds and Burnley will have similar issues as well. But you're right, because of the competitive nature and the financial fair play, you have to go and get the players where you can. And it feels that Sunderland, the model that they talked about, has worked quite well. But it may well mean that we have to start from scratch next season.
Well, who's going to ask me what my weekend was like?
What was your weekend like, Graham?
What was your weekend like, Graham? Tell us all about it.
I went to Lisbon for the Women's Champions League final, and Arsenal won. Arsenal beat Barcelona, the team that had won 3 out of the last 4 Champions League finals. The team that has the midfield of the world champion Spain playing for them. A midfield with 4 Ballon d'Ors in it. This is a Barcelona side that beat Chelsea 8-2 in the semi-final. And Arsenal beat them. This was an incredible match. You watch a game going into it thinking, we are going to get hammered here. We are totally going to get schooled in this game. My memory was going back to when Chelsea played Barcelona in the Champions League final a few seasons ago, and they were 4-0 down by half-time.
I remember that game.
That was hard going. And I was thinking, this is going to happen. This year, even when we got to half-time, it was 0-0. It was one of those games in which I kept thinking, I can totally see us conceding 3 goals in 10 minutes in this game because this is the way that they are playing. It was relentless, but it was an almost faultless performance there from Arsenal. The best performance I've ever seen them play. Absolutely titanic display from Leah Williamson. A goal from the goddess of chaos, Stina Blackstenius as well. And just an incredible scenes in Lisbon. And the party went on very, very late. I went to bed before it finished. I'm too old for all that now.
You're too old for this kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, absolutely. You did the right thing. You left the partying for your missus. Mrs. Graham stayed up and represented the household, presumably, well into the night. Beyond the surprise result, obviously, I mean, I didn't get the opportunity to watch the game. I mean, I looked at the stats and went, you know, this is a bit one-sided. But, you know, we know that these are how games can be won. This is how Palace won in the... Did I mention Palace won the cup?
Yes.
This is how Palace beat City. I mean, this is normal now. But I don't think... There's two things here. One is the sheer upset itself. Barcelona were ridiculously heavy favourites. I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if some bookies were not taking bets on Barcelona to win that game because they were such heavy favourites. But I think it's also significant in a season where Chelsea have won the treble and had an invincible season domestically, that is to say. For Arsenal to then do this almost, I think, trumps that, because frankly and bluntly, the WSL is owned by Chelsea at the moment. Mm. I don't mean physically, but because they put so much money into their squad development and squad depth, and they've got tremendous players and tremendous coaches. But actually, I think this is the greater achievement. One being the first English club to win the Champions League is a huge achievement. But also then beat the overwhelming favourites to do so. I think, I'll ask you, Graham, if you think you agree, but I think you will agree, that this trumps Chelsea's invincible achievement, I think. And I think it's right to make that kind of thing because, you know, it's Chelsea and it's good to trash Chelsea wherever possible.
No one will feel that more than Chelsea fans. Because they've won the last six titles, and yet, basically for the last three seasons at least, they've been knocked out by Barcelona. Barcelona always knock them out. They've always got one over on them. There is seemingly nothing they can do to get past them. And to see that display from Arsenal, getting a clean sheet against Barcelona, and this wasn't catching Barcelona on a bad day, this was just really stopping them playing. City had beaten Barcelona very, very early on in the competition, in the group stage. They lost the return fixture, but they managed to get a win a bit against them. And I think Rennie Slagers must have looked at that and think, well, right, well, what did City get right that night to do that? Chelsea fans could say, look, we had a season unbeaten. They've won a domestic treble, which they have done before. But I think this one, because it's eluded them, and Arsenal won it in a previous incarnation in 2007 when it was the UEFA Women's Cup. But now, when the hyper-professionalism of recent times, you couldn't see this one coming at all. And it was a real privilege to be in the crowd, baking in the sun without any sun cream, because the Stasi of UEFA decided that a 100ml bottle of sun cream wasn't allowed into the ground.
I'd like to say I'm shocked, but I'm not at all. Those people are atrocious.
Yes.
They really are. Yeah. UEFA are just atrocious.
Yeah, well, we've seen them take bottled waters off people going into a stadium in 40-degree heat.
Yeah, we have indeed.
Yeah, and they may well be citing safety for that, but you're compromising people's safety and putting their health at huge amount of risk by taking water off people.
Yeah.
I mean, sun cream is bad enough and petty and stupid and silly, but removing, you know, taking people's water off them. Mm. Get a life.
But anyway, I don't care now because we won the Champions League.
We've all done a I don't care.
Yes.
We've all done an I don't
None
care.
Of us care.
None of us care.
Oh, and as well, I think I can press the hot chocolate button again. Because also this week, Whiteleaf were officially declared champions, weren't they?
Yay!
Email.
It's the best season ever.
Yeah, and I think
we've got a hat trick, and Whiteleaf did it as well.
And we went to Wembley with Whiteleaf as well. All right, they didn't win that. Oh, that's put a bit of a dampener on the whole thing, isn't it, really?
Not really.
Not really.
It would have been nice.
Yeah.
If Willyf had won the Vase.
Maybe that would have been a little too greedy, wouldn't it, if that had happened?
Too much.
Yeah.
I think so. But yeah, no, Whiteleaf now in a very, very different arena now. There's a leap, I think, between step five where we were, step four where we're going into. We're moving in bigger clubs, more established non-league clubs. We're moving in. We're into that kind of National League arena now, you know, where we'll be able to clubs who will be looking up at the National League with hungry eyes. Dare I say, even our owner, who is now our owner rather than just our manager, because he himself has acknowledged perhaps that it's time to hand the reins over to someone so that he can focus on building the club. Kelly Watters, who has got us this far, both as owner, as manager, has taken the decision to step aside and bring his assistant in to manage the team so that he can presumably now focus on building out and fleshing out the club. So exciting times for Whiteleaf, and maybe we'll be discussing them more on the Sound of Football podcast, because they will be doing more interesting things in the future that we would consider to be worthy of the listener's attention.
Yes.
Rather than just like making it a Whiteleaf fan podcast, which occasionally it can become.
Yeah, well, let's not push anything off the table.
There's nothing out.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, let's face it, we've got to talk about Sonic next season, haven't we?
Yeah, well, yeah, because after Arsenal's men's finished fourth, the Arsenal women sort of like crash out of the first round of the Champions League, and Palace are bottom of the table. Well, no, second bottom of the table. Some of them being bottom. Yeah. Next season, there's going to be a big hangover. So let's enjoy the moment now.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, Arsenal can't go out of the Champions League in the first round because it's going to Swiss model next season. The Swiss model is rearing its beautiful head in the Women's Champions League as well.
Well, now, we're Team Swiss model here.
We are. We like it. There is a nonsense second competition in women's football next year, the Europa Cup. But more on that next season when it actually happens. But I guess really that's it for this season, isn't it? It's been fantastic, as you know, because I've pressed the hot chocolate button twice in this episode.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been one of the greats. Loved it.
Yeah, it's been the best season. From my point of view, it can't be anything other than that, can it really?
No. This is what football does to you. I mean, I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm meant to have had a really, really, really crap season. And oh no, 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 no. You can't burst my bubble, I'm afraid. No, I went to Lisbon. That is it for us this season. We will be back in the summer with a Women's Euros preview in June. I'll be going out there as well in July to watch a few games and drive all over Switzerland. But for now, for me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry Tvelin, enjoy the summer break and goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Right. Another season done, guys.
Season done. Yeah. Gone.
How many seasons is that now?
16, that is.
Jesus Christ.
Coming up for 17.
Amazing.
Truly amazing.
Right, I'm going to feed myself now, guys. Thanks for that. It was good pod.
That's okay.
And, yeah, right. Thanks for the season. It's been a wonderful season.
It has indeed.
And we all won. We all won.
Everyone's a winner.
Hit the hot chocolate button again.
Winner. Chicken dinner.
Speaking of which, that's exactly what I'm going for now. So
because that's what winners have. They have chicken dinner.
They have chicken
dinner.
Right. See you later, guys.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh.